The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
The day by the morning, the may break without warning. Keep on burning.
Good yawning this morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Wednesday, the 9th of October, 2024, and you are on the clock with Aaron Green. On the clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. Hurricane Milton is on the move. Islands on alert. Tropical storm warning for northern Bahamas. The numbers to call today, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, and 242-300-5720. For Family Island residents, it is toll free. To our Family Island listeners, please call in, especially from the Northern Islands. Please call in, tell us what the weather is like up there. What preparations are taking place? How do you feel as this tropical storm or these tropical storm conditions approach the northern? We also have a number of other headlines to discuss. Three in particular. Davis rules out formal inquiry on Dorian deaths. Delavaux, no charges to be brought against officer that shot family's dog. And dad of teen killed in bike crash seeks answers. Joining me in studio, as he always does on a Wednesday, is Mr. C.A. Murray. We're combining the shows On the Clock with Aaron Green and Guardian Radio AM to discuss what is in the news. So other than those stories, Mr. Murray, I have another story I'm going to start with. Then, if we have time to talk about the Eddie Minnis concert and the future of music in the Bahamas. And then in this week's papers, F&M Senator calls for resumption of hangings. F&M Senator calls for resumption of hangings. So those are some of the stories.
I didn't know hangings was suspended.
I mean, technically, they're not suspended.
Okay.
Technically.
So I'm sure he is aware of such.
Right, and we're going to talk. I mean, if you want to talk about that, we talk about that for a little bit.
I'm now concerned that if he's paying attention, the conversation should be different. The conversation should be defining the worst of the worst, not to re-establish hanging. Hanging did not go anyplace. It's still in the books.
Right, exactly.
So he's not aware of the conversation. If he's not having the proper conversation, then I am concerned.
He's not following the jurisprudence.
No.
The evolution of the law.
Yes.
Right, and so this week, in yesterday's paper, F&M Senator calls for resumption of hangings. Free National Movement Senator Darren Henfield yesterday called for the resumption of the death penalty as he criticized the, quote, unreasonable, close quote, standards set by the London-based Privy Council, which make it difficult for executions to take place. Henfield called for the Bahamian Court of Appeal to be the country's final appellate court for murder cases, adding that the Privy Council could be retained to hear appeals in civil matters. He said if this arrangement cannot work, then it is time to get rid of the Privy Council altogether as the final appellate court for the Bahamas. Quote, the Privy Council has shown us that it is not willing to cause an execution of a murderer to happen in the Bahamas or the Caribbean anytime soon. Close quote, said Henfield during debate in the Senate on the National Crime Intelligence Bill. Stick a pin.
Thank you very much. I was waiting for you to say it for a while.
Okay. The death penalty, I'm continuing from the article though, right? Yeah. I'm moving along. The death penalty is legal in the Bahamas as a punishment for murder.
Yes.
This is the article. However, no one has been executed since David Mitchell in January 2000, after he was convicted of the 1994 murders of a German couple. The Privy Council has ruled the execution should only take place for the, quote, worst of the worst, close quotes, or the, quote, rarest of the rare, close quotes, category of murder. Now, we return to Henfield's comments. Quote, this article said, quote, the harsh reality for us is that the jurisprudence on the death penalty, if someone says, okay, let's go to the Caribbean Court of Justice, the jurisprudence from the Caribbean Court of Justice is no different, close quotes.
I conclude Henfield need not to run anymore. He does not understand what is happening inside the Bahamas, and this is proof of it, and the Bahamian people need the man that he no longer speaks on these topics.
After doing my minimal research, I tend to agree.
With him?
With your position.
Because that'd be crazy.
That he is either entirely ignorant of the jurisprudence or attempts to obfuscate the common understanding of the law to score political points.
He has been in Parliament for 5 years and in the Senate for 3 years, has never has lobbied his government to define what is worst of worst. However, as opposition and as a senator, he has decided to grandstand, right, to pontificate and go on this soapbox to say, oh, it's London's fault that we have not defined worst of worst. Something is wrong there.
In fact, so the ruling essentially says that to be able to execute someone, that the act that they committed must be or should be the worst of the worst or the rarest of the rare. Now, I found the Max Tito versus the Queen case, right? This is a big case in this jurisprudence, right? Section 33. The two cardinal rules to be observed in deciding whether the death penalty should be imposed were summarized by Lord Carswell in the recent case of Trimmingham versus the Queen, 2009, in the following passages from paragraphs 20 and 21. Paragraph 20. Judges in the Caribbean courts have in the past few years set out the approach which a sentencing judge should follow in a case where the imposition of the death sentence is discretionary. This approach received the approval of the board in Pipersburg versus the Queen, 2008, and should be regarded as established law. Paragraph 21. It can be expressed in two basic principles. The first has been expressed in several different formulations, but they all carry the same message, that the death penalty should be imposed only in cases which on the facts of the offense are the most extreme and exceptional, the worst of the worst, or the rarest of the rare. In considering whether a particular case falls into that category, the judge should, of course, compare it with other murder cases and not with ordinary civilized behavior. I think that's an important point, right? I'm going to read it again. Mm. In considering whether a particular case falls into that category, the worst of the worst or the rarest of the rare, the judge should, of course, compare it with other murder cases and not with ordinary civilized behavior. The second principle is that there must be no reasonable prospect of reform of the offender and that the object of punishment cannot be achieved by any means other than the ultimate sentence of death. The character of the offender and any other relevant circumstances are to be may operate in his favor by way of mitigation and are not to weigh in the scales against him. Before it imposes a sentence of death, the court must be properly satisfied that these two criteria have been fulfilled. And so that's a bit of an explanation of the...
It seems plain to me. So the question is, why hasn't his administration imposed it? Why hasn't this administration imposed it? And not necessarily impose it, no. Make an attempt.
Right. So what is being said is that the Privy Council responded to the Bahamian government and said, if you want to resume hangings, mm-hmm. that you must create legislation that defines, right, that creates categories mm-hmm. of heinousness, mm-hmm. and defines what would be considered the worst of the worst or the rarest of the rare. And so it appears that the ball is in our court.
Have we done it yet?
No.
You think the Honorable Senator is aware that we haven't done that yet?
Yes.
You think that he should have at least spoke on that, have a conversation that how come we haven't done it yet?
I think so.
And he decided not to? But this is what concerns me.
Absolutely.
This is what concerns me, right?
Yeah.
His rationale on removing the Privy Council. Mm-hmm. and replace it by the appellate court here, mm-hmm. then have the audacity in our growth, our independence of being 50 years old as we pursue and have the conversations about being a republic. Mm-hmm. He has the audacity to show two-sidedness, to say, well, I don't want to have independence completely from the Privy Council. Mm-hmm. I just want to have partial independence from the Privy Council, only on the murder case because we black Negroes can control that. But we are not matured enough. We are not deliberate enough. We are not astute enough in the aspects of law. See, I have a problem with that for a person who has to be educated and supposed to be a nationalist and who has have that aspiration of being bigger and grander. That's hypocritical. This is a clear sign that he should not want to run anymore.
Well, listen, I would like to continue to read from the article. In May, Minister of National Security Wayne Monroe said the death penalty issue is out of the government's hand. Quote, as it relates to capital punishment, that is completely out of the hands of any politician because the side opposite gave the power to decide the charge to the Office of the Department of Public Prosecutions. And the trials are before an independent judiciary whose independence is guaranteed by our Constitution, said Monroe in the House of Assembly. But the legislature is also independent in the same sense and can create laws that will stand and it will require a judicial review to determine that they're bad law. The legislature could do it.
This is one of those times when we need to advocate again for the Minister of National Security to not need to run anymore. Because he's obfuscating. He is confusing the public with his utterance, right? Because he's making no steps, no comprehensive steps to move us to the next level. He just blocks it, then frustrates the public without any explanation of what it is that we should be doing. Because we're frustrated. He's aware we're frustrated. Mm-hmm. He's aware that we're concerned. But instead of addressing the concern, instead of giving ideas on what we can do, Emmanuel has the power. He's in cabin laws and the suggestions given by the Privy Council. And then he said, there's a but. And he does this continuously in every conversation we have in terms of moving the Bahamas forward. And then we stay stuck and we never debate it no more. Just shuts the entire conversation down because he's the most learned gentleman. He knows how to, what word is it? Obfuscate.
Yeah.
And see, and we as a Bahamian people need to say, no, you need not need to be in this place anymore. Because you're causing a problem, you're causing us not to move forward anymore, and we're frustrated now.
That's on top of telling people that seven-year-olds can consent even though the law will not recognize it as consent, and now we have a man named David Martin that had the audacity to go before court and say, I didn't even think that impregnating my girlfriend's teenage daughter would amount to this much trouble. I didn't realize, forgive me.
And it's because of public utterance of the Minister of National Security, which is causing this frustration, this causing this blockage,
right? Where we saying we're putting our hands up in the sky now, so we have no clue what to do anymore because our parliamentarians is not taking the next step. The things that they said they was going to do, and now we have a parliamentarian now who's going to be there to decide not to do anything at all.
Absolutely. Take a look at that text, Mr. Nuri. So I had some questions I compiled for this portion of the discussion. Death penalty, should we resume hangings?
Now, let me read this, right? This is a text, by the way. It said, the gentleman on your show, I guess I'm the co-host, right? So he doesn't know where of my name. The gentleman on your show spoke out of turn. The senator is indeed aware. Read before you assume. Mm. Now, let me respond to the texter, the misinformed texter, simpleton. Anyway, we are aware that the senator is aware. That's why I said it that way. He had to be aware because the debate happened again and again in the House. But clearly, he can't be aware because of his statement. And if he is aware, issuing that such statement, he needs to resign. It's an indictment on him.
Absolutely. Let's go to the phone line, producer. Good morning, caller.
Hello, is this the Nassau Guardian?
It is, but you are on air, on the clock with Erin Green. Would you like to speak to a receptionist?
Yes, please. Thank you.
Hold on, 302-2300.
Thank you.
You're welcome. The questions again. Should we resume hangings? Should we replace the Privy Council and make a Bahamian final court of appeal? Should we replace the Privy Council with the Caribbean Court of Justice as the final court of appeal? Should Wayne Monroe resign in his capacity as Minister of National Security? Do you agree that, quote, the death penalty issue is out of the government's hands, close quotes? And finally, what can the government do to address crime generally and reduce murders specifically?
And you said the Minister of National Security saying that the death penalty is out of the government's hand?
Yes, let me read.
No, say that again so the listening audience, and this is his position, official position, so we'll be able to deal with them come next year election.
Next year election. In May, Minister of National Security Wayne Monroe said the death penalty issue is out of the government's hand. Hmm. How could it be? And the legislature is a part of the government. They make laws. The executive is a part of the government. They create policy, and then they speak to the legislature about how best to create laws to support the operation of the policy.
And one must also ask, who was the Minister of National Security speaking to? Who was his audience? What was the objective of this statement? Who was he addressing to convince, to convey a message to? Mm-hmm. It was not to his parliamentarians. The message was to us, to cease and desist asking about it. Don't ask me about this no more. It's out of my hands. Don't ask about no murder anymore.
But I don't understand. A similar response in questions about the nature of the probe. For instance, will the public, right, be given access to the results of the probe? How can the Minister of National Security look to the public and say, I don't know if you will have access to the probe or not because I'm not a part of the investigation. As the Minister of National Security, you are aware of, let's go to the phone line producer, the protocol, sorry, caller, I missed you. Somebody could pop right back up. Good morning, caller.
Well, good morning, Erin. You know, I really appreciate you keeping your eye on the text and the cell phone and putting the people through right away. Let me tell you why it's so important, because not everybody has a lot of money to be on hold on a cell phone. But thank you for being so expedient.
I'm going to try.
I keep listening. And I wonder, because it says that all of my rulers swear to the queen, her heirs and successors. But yet they tell me we're sovereign, decision-making, independent country. But then other people tell me it's out of our hands. So am I really independent and sovereign? Because I'm listening to the words.
Mm-hmm.
You see the difference? I don't think we're independent. We have an illusion of independence. But if we were independent, we'd be able to say, listen, the worst of the worst is what happened. Remember Fox Hill where they used the weapon of mass destruction and gunned down all those people in the street on the circle?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was pretty much the worst of the worst. But if it wasn't, we should have sent those people not to Fox Hill, to London. to go and hang out with the people who make the decision on the worst of the worst. Shouldn't we be able to decide what is the worst of the worst? If you rape a child, that's not the worst of the worst?
I mean, I think it is.
I mean, it behooves me, let me use some legal words now because they'd be listening, that we're unable to get rid of crime on an island 21x7 and the dense population's in 10x7, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You really tell me, with all the policing skills we have, we can't put somebody on every corner like used to be in Miami downtown? Remember that?
Yeah.
You couldn't crawl nowhere downtown Miami and every block got a cop. They can catch you. Don't go and rob an ice cream shop and think you could run north or south, east or west. So we're not serious.
Mm-hmm.
And I've watched it for 50 years. And I'll be darned if I vote for anybody who has not fixed it in 50 years, talk about they need another chance at the wheel. You done crashed my car, Aaron. I fix it, and you talk about you want to come drive it again? Let's fix the Bahamas this time. Have a good one.
Thank you. Let's go to the next caller, producer. Thank you, Mr. Weatherford. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Ms. Green. Good morning, Mr. Nui.
Morning.
Yeah, Nui, thank you for having on Uncle yesterday, and also thank you for showing the text so that you have a critical mind, okay?
Hmm.
Talking, but you didn't. But anyhow, let's get on. Downtown... in Miami, there's a shopping district. I was there with my fiance years ago, and there used to be a patrol car parked up, and they had a police dummy in it, but if you was not a regular person in that area, you wouldn't really know that it's a dummy in the car. So if they do that over here, then they could actually use psychology because you wouldn't know who's in the car, when, what.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just a little joke, but here's what perplexes me as it relates to justice. The thing is, what people don't understand, United Nations has kidnapped humanity in which they bully countries into adhering to whatever their mandates are. So they, with human rights, saying no death penalty, et cetera, et cetera. But that means you don't have any sovereign rights if you can't inflict the death penalty on some of the crimes that Grime, everybody was the worst of the worst. The curse of the curse. But yes, what perplexes me, and I want you to listen very carefully.
Mm-hmm.
So we had three young men who were snuffed out after a subsequent armored truck robbery, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so now, I waited a few weeks, but I'm not hearing any statement from any law enforcement, obviously, about the status of these investigations. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
So I don't expect for anything to happen and them to never find who perpetrated these crimes. So I'll leave you to read between the lines. Don't worry about the headlines. Bless up.
Thank you, 52. The three headlines that I want to touch on today all speak to the same element in our political. Davis rules out formal inquiry on Dorian deaths. Delavaux, no charges to be brought against officer that shot family's dog. Dad of teen killed in bike crash seeks answer. Let's start with the last one. The father of a teen killed in a traffic accident involving a car belonging to a senior judge wants closure and answers from the police about the circumstances of his death. Kevin Lusant's son, Breon Sweeting, 17. Finally,
we get the name
of this young man. Say condolences to Kevin Lusant and Precious Sweeting on the tragic loss of their son.
And not a name from the officials.
Who was driving the vehicle. No, because we have the name of the person who molested raped the 8-year-old girl. We have the name of the man who slept with his girlfriend's teenage daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we have the name of the individual who was driving the vehicle belonging to the senior judge or assigned possibly to the senior judge?
Mm.
Right?
You know, we had a debate about the parents of interference or not fairness in investigations.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why the prime minister said, we're going to get foreign help to investigate this corruption charge inside the police force recently.
And we still can't confirm which foreign help it was.
I don't think any foreign help came, but that's something different, right? But the Prime Minister announced that it's to avoid or to ensure that justice is being performed,
mm-hmm.
right? This is now a concern here in this case. The Bahamian people are concerned whether justice is being performed
mm-hmm.
because there's no transparency, there's no clarity. There's no information. And we sit back and we watch. And then there's just be a conclusion that, okay, we ain't doing nothing with it no more. And that's it. And we have to learn to accept it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a building frustration that is happening.
And it's, I think it's, it, if I, It's an anathema in the law. It's abhorrent. It's intolerant. The law can't tolerate it. The legal system, the system of governance can't tolerate it, but yet they force it upon us. Producer, let's go to the phone line, and then we're going to continue reading from the article. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Aaron.
Morning, sir.
I listen to you guys' show all the time. I love this show. Very informative.
Thank you.
I just want to point out something to you guys. I don't know if you've noticed it, right? But I've been observing, whenever there's a prominent person in this country that gets murdered, they find the killers right away. I mean, like, right away. But if it's falling sun from through the corner, it takes forever.
Or if it's Hal Taylor, or Thaddeus McDonald, or Wellington Gilbert, or Paul Wiley.
Again, prominent persons.
Mm-hmm.
Prominent person. As long as it's someone important, they find them right away. But let Johnny around the corner get killed. They never find the person. Or even if they find the person, they pick up some innocent person, they pin it on them, they go to court.
Mm-hmm.
In this country, if you're not in the well-to-do, nobody cares. Nobody raises their alarm unless it's someone important, someone prominent. And sadly, the rest of us, we're just left to suffer the consequences, and that's how I feel.
Yes, sir. I understand why. I mean, I can understand why you feel that way and why many others feel that way. That if you don't have sufficient political or social credit, people don't care. Because
exactly.
when you have political and social credit, they don't care either, you know. But they are attempting to attach themselves, right, to feign a proximity to that credit. But if you are nobody, that's not even worth the effort.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. And, you know, they was talking about, 52 was talking about the investigation into those three murders and, the alleged bank, Amakar robbers.
Mm-hmm.
the murders for them. I mean, it's safe to assume the murders for them, they're riding around in the police cars.
Listen, no, we can't say that. I can cut out of your contribution. You can't say that.
Trying to stop us from getting this gig we have. Interrupt this gig we have, man, on the radio.
But it's important. It speaks to the critique, which is that it's important for this administration and successive administrations to take the promise of honesty, accountability, and transparency in politics and governance seriously, because it erodes not just the confidence in political parties, not just the confidence in politicians, but it erodes the confidence in the delivery of good governance in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas.
We have a text here that says, good morning, Aaron and CA. I think Minister Wayne Monroe was supposed to resign from a few well cases ago, especially when he allegedly said a 9-year-old could give consent. He has no care for vulnerable women and children. So long. Bye-bye.
He said 7. That's why this case involving the 8-year-old is so troubling, because what if that individual, the alleged assailant, presumed in his mind that 8 is okay because the minister said 7 is the line, right? We're already contending with. See, the problem is we already contend. And a social culture where people say things like, it ain't the age, it's the amount of grass on the field. We don't weigh them by their age. We don't assess them by their age, we assess them by their weight. If they big enough, that means they're mature enough to engage in sexual intercourse. You're already bucking up against a dangerous rape culture, and such flippant and reckless remarks, it appears, has been reinforcing the rape culture as opposed to deconstructing the rape culture.
I would say, go as far as to say that our parliamentarians are creating a new culture, a culture where we are numbed, and the population are numbed to crime. We just say, they can do whatever they want to do anyway.
I would like to draw there's a word I'm looking for, but then I ain't gonna say it. You know, it reminds me of rape culture, when you continually drug a person so that they are numb as you force upon them these. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Hey, good morning, Aaron.
Good morning, sir.
Listen, I hear the commentary as far as with, on the Honorable Wayne Monroe is concerned. And, you know, I think basically for him to actually make statements like that, we need to actually go and interrogate the lawyers to see whether what he's saying actually has teeth. We are here dismissing what he's saying, but no one has gone forward yet to come back and say, hey, it's not in the law.
Jeff, I have, right? So here's what the problem is, and I've laid it out, right? The minister's statements in and of itself are troubling, but you then juxtapose them to the jurisprudence and the evolution of the law, right? Where under the cover of night, the offense that was commonly known as statutory rape, right? And it's statutory rape because the age of consent is 16. It doesn't matter if he or she says yes, they don't have the capacity to consent. So it's statutory. Just like drug possession is statutory. It don't matter how you became in possession, put it in your bag, you are in possession of it and you face right. So the law was changed from statutory rape to unlawful sexual intercourse. And the critique that I have laid down constantly is that we need to be given the rationale for, right, a formal white paper, a policy paper, outlining the rationale for changing the law from statutory rape to unlawful sexual intercourse. Because it could appear to the layman and the unlearned man, both legally illiterate and politically illiterate, it could appear that the law was changed to match the prevailing culture of the policymakers.
Right.
Not that, and so to respond to your point that perhaps Mr. Monroe is clearly articulating the law, what I'm arguing is that the law has been changed to clearly articulate a particular political culture. And that the arguments that the plea deals and the changing of language will make it easier for convictions, which is better for victims, is a farce because the DPP has said it and the AG has said it. Plea deals make it easier for the system. In fact, what it is that they have once again weakened the law to make their job of governance easier and then want to ply us with these, to use an allegory or an analogy, ply us with these drugs to numb us so we don't have the capacity, psychological and mental capacity to understand what is unfolding or evolving in front of us.
Everything is coming.
Well, Aaron, I can appreciate everything that you have said, and obviously, and you know, persons who have actually listened to my commentary, you know, basically it is well thought out. I would have also been able to, as best I can, articulate my position on these things. And oftentimes, yourself, myself, and CA are always on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
But I then still preface it with saying, and you're quite so right, because the legislators can go into the parliament and enact things unbeknownst to us, or not as clear as we would think that they would articulate these things. And when you hear them make these statements, then it means that we must do jurisprudence to go back into the law to see whether these things apply, what has been changed, what has been altered, and why they've been altered in the way that they have. But again, in closing, this is where the public now becomes, should be a part of this process. We are persons going into the parliament changing things, and some things fly over the heads of some of us, but then some of us catch what is being said and then bring it back to the forefront for we who may have missed the understanding or the interpretation of what's being said, a deeper discussion. So again, thank you for the clarification, and hey, it's back to the drawing board. Have a good day.
Absolutely, thank you.
I have this text here, Aaron, that says, good morning, Lady E and CA. I thought the government makes and see the law is upheld. If hanging is on the books, carry out the law or replace it. We should have a court of appeal. We do have a court of appeal, eh?
Right. I think the text is saying that, responding to the question, should the Bahamas hold its own final court of appeal, right? Should the court of appeal be our final court of appeal and we just rest there?
Another text, Aaron, says, good morning, Aaron. Do you know when the law was changed from statutory rape, please?
I can't pinpoint the date. It has to have been one of the more recent amendments to the, I think, Sexual Offenses Act. I'm not 1,000% certain, but I think it's happened over the last 6 to 7 years. Max.
Next text says, what hurts me is no one offered condolences to the three young men killed post-armed car theft. The police will never look or find the killers. I bet you that. Oblivion, I guess oblivious, and nothing will be the fate of these cases. Oh, by the way, two of the men are an integral part of the voice note with a high-ranking officer. None of us are safe. Please know that.
I want to read another story. Davis rules out formal inquiry on Dorian deaths. Prime Minister Philip Brave Davis said investigations into Hurricane Dorian-related deaths are ongoing, administratively, in quotations. Ongoing, quote, administratively, close quotes, to guide future actions as his administration decided to forego a more formal inquiry that he once suggested might be necessary. See, another instance of this. The inquiry into the Dorian deaths has nothing... Okay, let me rephrase that. The primary purpose of the inquiry into the Dorian deaths is to provide closure for the family. This idea that it's ongoing administratively to guide future actions. Nobody cares at this point. The inquiry into the Dorian deaths is primarily to provide accountability and resolution for the survivors of Dorian and the people of the Bahamas. His comment came after the Tribune asked about his previous calls for an independent inquiry, either by outside police investigators or through a commission of inquiry to determine the fate of those still missing in Abaco and Grand Bahama following the Category 5 storm. The unresolved uncertainty surrounding the number of people unaccounted for after Hurricane Dorian continues to linger. In June 2020, then National Security Minister Marvin Dames reported that 279 people were missing, while then Assistant Commissioner of Police Solomon Cash said that only 33 remained unaccounted for. Last year, Mr. Davis said an inquiry had not been ruled out but did not confirm whether one would occur. Quote, I did not promise a commission of inquiry, close quotes. He told reporters during a press conference last night, quote, might be necessary, and you mooted.
Yeah, you mooted.
So you treated Dorian like a hypothetical debate.
Deaths of Bahamians.
You treated it like a hypothetical debate. Okay, no problem. Let me continue reading from the article.
He mooted. M-O-O-T-E-D.
Quote, I mooted, M-O-O-T-E-D, that one might be necessary. And as we took office and realized the other issues that impacted this country and its people, you mean like the dire, urgent need for hurricane shelters?
This is why.
Because I will read the other story about how the authorities want to assure the people of Abaco who are living in temporary homes and shelters that they will be evacuated somewhere safe, just not a designated hurricane shelter.
Aaron, the reason we need a inquiry about Dorian is a number of the shelters collapsed during the hurricane,
right.
Dorian. We need an inquiry to find out what went wrong, how was shelters assessed, in terms to be determined that they are hurricane shelters, so that doesn't happen again.
And so did the people who are actively right now listening to all of the broadcasts about this monster of a storm that may potentially meet another weather system over the Bahamas, right? Like, you have these people now sitting in their homes or wherever they can find and seek out shelter, understanding that not only has it been 5 years and you haven't constructed the hurricane shelter that you promised, but if anything were to happen to them or their loved ones, their lives would be treated as frivolously as this, or not frivolous at all, you know, because apparently this is great political credit to be used. I will continue reading. We thought it best to tackle those issues, and we're doing that and attempt to, through administrative means, get to the bottom of what happened at that time in Hurricane Dorian. What are administrative means? You're going to sit at a table and jot down notes? I mean, you don't have reports, you don't have investigations, You don't have recorded conversations. You don't have video documenting the remaining structures of the building.
They're not prepared to entertain that. They're going to make this decision independent of those people who went through Hurricane Dorian.
Now for some poetry. Quote, there's much resources that are required to pull us from where we are and to get us where we are today. And so we didn't think that a useful exercise for us to go through a commission of inquiry with respect to that. Thousands of people's lives were lost. Dear Philip Edward Davis, witnesses on the ground in Abaco during the storm, immediately after the storm, and recovery operations, witnesses indicated through social media, personal face-to-face testimony, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds amounting to possibly even bodies.
They don't see any worth in a commission of inquiry regarding Dorian because there's no worth in the debts, into what went wrong, into correcting what went wrong, into hearing those people's stories. There's no worth
in
it.
I have a greater concern. It is such an egregious thing that I question whether I should even mention it on the radio. I can take the time to frame my thoughts so that I could articulate them clearly without question or obfuscation, because this is entirely and totally unacceptable. The psychological state that you create in the hearts of individuals and communities with the disregard and dereliction of duty. Let's move on.
Oh. Let me read this, and then you can respond to this too, Aaron. Mm-hmm. Says, a text again says, I agree with your positions, Aaron, and CA Ryan Pinder, Attorney General, should step down after his comments that he wants to reassure the public that they are not being lenient on the accused, but are making sure justice is served when there is the evidence, so they negotiate a guilty plea. Who's getting justice? So do we need juries anymore?
Which is very concerning, right? The lack of rationale for this jurisprudence and these changes, given the public conversation held by the current justices and former justices, including Chief Justice Ian Winder and Sir Michael Barnett, and a number of other judges interrogating the value of judge-only trials, right? And removing jury trials, at the very least allowing an option for a judge-only trial. Here's an article from yesterday's paper. AG plea deals sometimes necessary to ensure justice. I just want to read the quote that the texter was referring to. After public outrage over the recent sentencing of a man who pleaded guilty to raping an 83-year-old woman and other crimes, Attorney General Ryan Pinder said yesterday plea agreements are not about being lenient. Quote, we understand that some recent sentencing has raised concerns, especially when plea deals are involved, close quote, said Pinder in the Senate. He added, we assure the public that when we pursue a plea deal, it's not about being lenient on the accused. And we're going to turn to page 8. It's about making sure justice is served in the best way possible, having regard for the facts and circumstances around that particular case. How does an individual who has been sentenced to 24 years, 9 of which for raping an 83-year-old woman, including anal and vaginal rape, how does that 24-year sentence, how is it directed to be served concurrently and not consecutively? Producer, let's go to the phone line, and that story, AG, plea deals sometimes necessary to ensure justice is in yesterday's Guardian. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Ms. Green. How are you?
I'm good, thank you, sir.
Good, Mr. Neary.
Blessings.
I want to comment on the hanging.
Yes, sir.
Right?
Yes, sir.
See, we had an argument on this over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Hanging is not to deter killing, you know. Hanging is for the crime in which you do. Then you run the red light, they have a punishment for that. Then you steal, they have a punishment for that. Hanging is only the punishment for the crime. You ain't worried about trying to stop murder. I mean, I wish murder can be stopped. But they were murdering from the Bible time. And people now have this thing about a lot of these boys come from a single parent. Cain and Abel, their mommy and daddy was the first couple on earth, and they had murder. Murder is here with us. Dying anywhere?
Okay.
But hanging is for the punishment for the crime in which you do. I know the deterrent. Me and mama know the deterrent.
So I appreciate
punish.
What you're saying is for those people who say the death penalty is no, executions are not a deterrent, so that argument is invalid. What you're saying is it was never intended to be a deterrent.
No, it's a punishment. It's a punishment.
Okay.
When you run the red light, the police see you, that's $250. That's the punishment for running the red light.
You know, I'm so proud of the Royal Bahamas Police Force with the number of visually impaired drivers they've been able to employ.
What?
You hear me say $150, fine, but they don't see you. They have so many visually impaired officers working so well in the force.
Man, it's not that bad, Mr. Green.
It is. I mean, I'm just saying.
Let's just say, imagine if the police force was in here for 1 week.
I'm trying to be responsible and not respond to you, sir. It's a wonderful question. It's not worthy of inquiry, and hopefully I could meet you somewhere outside of the studio so we could have that conversation. What would happen if the police didn't exist for a week in the Bahamas? Good morning, caller. Good morning, caller. Are you there, caller? I'm sorry, we missed you. Mr. Nuri, what time do you have there on that clock? Because I want to read one more story.
7 minutes you have.
All right. The next story. Delavo, no charges to be brought against officer that shot family dog. Producer, let's take this phone call. I don't want people waiting too long. Good morning, caller.
Hey, how you doing, Ms. Green?
I'm good, thank you. How you do?
Everything good. So I would like to postulate for a second and hypothesize.
Yes, sir.
What if the crime and the criminology, there is a direct correlation between the morality of our nature, our nation, and the crime rate? So say, for example, and I understand the caller saying with the hanging march is the punishment. But I think if we want to solve problems, we need to, we need to dissect our nation. Let's look at the depth of it. What are we seeing from people who are deemed to be more intelligent than us? What are their attitude and behavior? What is the moral stance of our ethical institution? Are we having our people who are in charge being held? I am under the impression that what is happening at the bottom is a direct reflection of what is happening at the top. And I'll tell you why. The average guy in town or over the hill, right? A hotel worker. These people are best. Are operating under a program. If you ask them about nation building, you ask them about the operations of guns, where the guns coming from, you look at their understanding into how a society works, you will find that most of these people are at the back end. Like, you will look at some of the crimes, some of the people who've been accused and are before the courts of crimes, and you will look at the people who are there conspirators, the people who are their co-accused. A lot of these people are, they are what a physical tool or a catalyst. But the actual plan, it came from higher power. So I think if we look more carefully, we would see that there is a moral erosion. I'm talking about religiously, politically. The lines of what is right or wrong has been blurred. And before I leave, I would like to say again, the highest office in the Western Hemisphere, the U.S. president, and the front runner to be the president is a convicted felon, and he is waiting to be sentenced for sexual assault. Let that sink in. And then let's look at our nation and the Western Hemisphere in its entirety.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you for that thoughtful contribution this morning. Mr. Nuri, I'm going to just respond to that, and then I and try read. Maybe in your hour, we can read the third story. Yeah. Here's my position, the death penalty. as it stands right now in New Providence. I cannot agree to an administration, right? A system of governance that would have the audacity to execute people, but feels no obligation to adhere to the rule of law, to ensure that the Public Disclosure Commission operates constitutionally, to ensure that the offices created by the Constitution operate properly. I don't think that this administration, the last administration, administrations that operate in this manner have the moral authority to execute people. You cannot be running red lights and stop signs in government vehicles, breaking the law, and then turn around and say that you have an authority to execute people for the crimes that they have committed. There's too much dirty hands in the pot for any one of those hands to come out and say, we are going to be executing people. Good morning, caller. You got 30 seconds. Good morning, caller. Good morning, caller. You there? Sorry. I missed you. All right. You got a couple of minutes. Okay. One last headline I want to read into the record on this hour, and then we're going to go to that story about the family and the dog. Oh, boy. Let's catch this caller. It's a hot conversation. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Aaron. How you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How you do?
Yeah, good morning, CA.
Pleasant.
This was coming from the Attorney General, man, from Ryan Vindeman. To execute justice is to get the evidence. Like how you say, right, they get a DNA lab yet, or they got to send DNA to the states and wait 3 weeks and 4 weeks for it to come. If you have a rape test and you get semen test and you get DNA of the person and he has samples and all that, man, you could use some evidence and things like that to convict the person. You know, with witness and all that and everything. Improve their labs. Get more up to date. Come up to 2024. CSI and them type of things. And stop talking foolishness on this radio, man. They're being lenient. That's what it is. And stop talking foolishness. All right, y'all have a good day.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. Here's a headline I wanted to read into the record from the 7th Monday's news. A story coming out of our news. A 39-year-old man, the headline is 10-year sentence for man caught having sex with teen boy. A 39-year-old man whom police caught having sex with a teenage boy has been jailed for 10 years after taking a plea deal. Jonathan Brown pleaded guilty to unlawful sexual intercourse with a minor of the same sex when he McKay. On October 28, 2022, police were on patrol in Western New Providence when they came across a parked car. The officers stopped to investigate, and they caught Brown having sex with the 15-year-old boy. I think that just needed to be read into the record, in particular, as I continue to ask for the rationale for changing the law, amending the law, changing it from statutory rape to unlawful sexual intercourse. And I'm going to be honest with you, if I see anybody saying anything like, well, y'all know these girls are fast nowadays, right? Then we're just going to ask you to resign. Because it's absolutely and totally inappropriate commentary for people who have volunteered to be our nation's leaders. Anyway, this hour is over. After the break and the news, Guardian Radio with AM with C.A. Newry takes up the helm, and we continue our Man Down Mashup Wednesday, and we're going to get into the story. Delavo, no charges to be brought against officer that shot family's dog. You've been on the clock. Don't change that dial. 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day.
If you live in clapboard house, you ain't got no pride. If you move to the suburbs of your roots, you're trying to hide. I wish they would mind their own business. Yes, they
just sign in and have a seat, please. They'll call you in for your x-ray shortly.
That's why they call it a waiting room. You won't have that problem at Fourth Terrace Diagnostic Center or Imaging at Groner. We never schedule multiple appointments, so you'll be in and out in no time. And if your initial screening reveals a concern, our radiologist can conduct an alternative screening right then and there. Call 321 to schedule an appointment at 4th Terrace Diagnostic Center or imaging at Grosvenor today.
You try to rest, but go with the best. For all your printing needs, there ain't no one better, no. For posters and banners, magazines and flyers. For window decals, greeting cards and newsletters. No job too big and there's no job too small. You name it, we can print it, just give us a call. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located at the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.